I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. It's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week are freelance writer Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney and editor Arsalan Iftikhar, syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete, and Sports Illustrated reporter Pablo Torre. I may jump in here or there, but for now, take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Hey, fellas, what's up? Welcome to the shop. How you doing?
Hey.
Doing good, man.
Pretty good, dude.
You know what? Members of Congress are holding town hall meetings on the subject of health care, and there's been some tough talk and raucous discourse that's reportedly got a little physical. A-Train, what's up with that?
Personally, I haven't seen such, you know, fake manufactured outrage, you know, since Glenn Beck's fake tears on Fox News Channel. This, you know, really is taking away from the substantive debate that should be had. I think that we need to maintain a civilized discourse and understand the organizational foundation of the protests that are going
on. Well, what does that mean, though? Just for the sake of analogy, since you're the civil rights lawyer,
right.
that was leader-led, that was organized, but
right.
It didn't mean it wasn't authentic.
We're not addressing the authenticity of the issue. We're getting into the tactics of the issue. So when
no, I think you are. I think you're doing both. When you're saying this is ginned up and fake, in
right.
the sense you're saying it's not authentic, and it may be rude, it may be obnoxious,
right.
it may, in your view, cross the line beyond what's civil. But you see my point, just because it's organized, does that mean it's not authentic?
Yeah, and to your point, it's gotten so far beyond debate. It's gotten more like WWF.
Yeah, it's Fight Club.
It's Fight Club.
It's Ruben.
Ruben. Ruben.
Listen, it's Fight Club on both sides because people feel passionately about the healthcare issue. And nobody's hands are clean. And the reason is because healthcare, unlike any other issue, forget the war, forget immigration, healthcare hits people where they live, particularly senior citizens, who have to worry a lot about their doctors, prescription, health costs, all that stuff, the cost of pills. And so I think this was always going to be a really volatile and explosive issue. I think the White House made a series of mistakes. It miscalculated exactly how people feel about this. It also made a mistake in saying that it didn't need any Republican support to pass this.
Right.
But then it turned around and it lost the Blue Dog Democrats. And so all of a sudden it needed the Republicans more than it thought.
First of all, I think I challenge the accuracy of that. I don't think the White House ever said that they weren't trying to get Republican support.
They said it just a couple days ago.
Why was Max Baucus trying so hard to keep Republicans on board in the Senate if the White House didn't think that they wanted if they only wanted to work with the Democratic caucus, they could have done that from the beginning. So I guess I don't buy that.
Here's what I heard 6 months ago, and then recently President Obama just last week. But 6 months ago, they basically said, we're able to do healthcare reform without Republican support. If they don't want to come along,
right.
fine. It's a nice negotiating tactic. It says basically, you guys can come to the table if you want to, but we really don't need you. And just last week, President Obama said he's prepared to do this without Republican support. That's okay if you can deliver all of your team members, but
right.
he can't. That's the whole problem. He's losing the Blue Dog Democrats. And so that is a strategic mistake of the first order. And I think this has just been, I think a lot of the criticism of Obama has been overblown.
Mm.
You know, socialism, forget that. Depicting him as Hitler, forget all that. But a lot of what the White House has done here is kind of like George Bush was boneheaded on immigration. He really didn't understand how deep the opposition went on that. Same thing here for Obama and healthcare.
Well, I want to go back to a point that Jimmy made that he wrote about in The Root. Earlier this week. I mean, he talked about just getting back to the tenor of this alleged debate
right.
and the kind of over-the-top rhetoric that has been seen in some of these places, these signs and stuff. And Jimmy, you made the point, maybe why don't you just tell people what you said? I can describe it sort of briefly and you
right.
can sort of pick up the point
right.
that, you know, let's look at the demographics of the people who seem to be showing out
right.
at these
right.
events and using this kind of language and their behavior. There was an incident at Claire McCaskill's. You wrote about this before this happened, but
right.
at Missouri Senator Claire McCaskill's town hall, where a woman, an African-American woman, had a sign of Rosa Parks. A man goes up, rips the sign out of her hands, and then she is the one who's escorted out. And you made
yeah.
the point that, you know, what's up with that?
Yeah, she's escorted out by this phalanx of security, and the only thing they do to the guy, they make sure he has a seat. They're like, go back to your seat, and they tell her
right.
to leave.
Oh,
you know, and what's
right.
interesting to me is we know that there are brown faces on the right. I mean, Ruben, right?
Hey, there you go. Come read my mail, brother. Right, I'm an equal opportunity offender.
Exactly. You know, so both of you, where are you guys in the debate for healthcare? I mean, I mean, all the pictures I see, I don't see a whole lot of brown faces.
Yeah,
I don't
know what's up with that.
Let me say this: if there were nobody's a bunch of brown faced people out there yelling and screaming and hollering, you know what? out would come the dogs, the hoses, and the nostalgic blackjacks. I promise you, it would be on and cracking.
Well, and this is Pablo here.
Go ahead, man.
Yeah, I mean, let me say first off that I'm in favor of town hall meetings, the notion of a plebiscite. I think it's a fabric of, you know, democracy harkening back to ancient Athens and debating underneath the olive tree and everything like that. At the same time, A, it is ginned up, but B, I think we just have to realize that it's a self-selecting population of people. Anybody who's willing to walk to a town hall meeting feels really strongly about this. I don't necessarily think it's an accurate cross-section of America, whether it's black or white, liberal, conservative. I mean, obviously, the rest of the country is different from the coasts, for example. But at the same time, I feel like people who write letters into magazines, like people who are willing to physically take the activity and go to a town hall meeting, they're going to be on the extremes no matter what, even before it's ginned up in the first place.
Why?
Really?
Why? I mean, people stand online to get Springsteen tickets. Yeah. Michelle, go ahead, Arsene.
No, the analogy that I use that I think really simplifies and boils down the issue in essence is that imagine if the white guy, John McCain, had won the presidency.
Right.
Would we ever have seen the birthers movement? Would we have ever seen this sort of visceral, physical hatred at angry town hall meetings? I hardly think so.
I'm going to take the easy road right now and jump in and say, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm speaking with Jimmy Israel, Arsalan Iftikhar, Pablo Torre, and Ruben Navarrete in the barbershop. Back to you, Jimmy.
All right. Well, you know, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton got a little salty during the Q&A session on her 7-nation, 11-day tour of Africa to illuminate human rights issues. We got some tape on that, right?
Yes, we do. And I'm glad you mentioned that this is a 7-nation tour. It's an 11-day trip. It is the longest trip that she's taken as Secretary of State. I think those are all important points to point out when we mention this 30-second exchange in the Congo. But I'll just play it for you. She gave this. She was asked a question about what her husband, the former President Bill Clinton, thinks about a particular issue, and this is what she said. Here it is.
Wait, you want me to tell you what my husband thinks? My husband is not the Secretary of State. I am. So you ask my opinion, I will tell you my opinion. I'm not going to be channeling my husband.
Wow. You know what, A-Train?
That's the second rumble.
You can't talk to a brother like that. That's a hate crime right there.
Wait, but you know what, Ruben? I totally understand where she's coming from, because it's like when people ask me, you know, what my girlfriend thinks. And I say, you know what, if you want to know what Condoleezza thinks, you need to go,
talk to her.
You know, my name is Jimmy, and I cannot speak.
I thought you were going to say, if you want to know what Beyonce says, you need to talk to her.
I cannot speak for Condi. But Ruben, what's up with your girl, man? She went off.
She went crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, this is all about what happened with Bill Clinton in North Korea. I called it last week. I said it right. You can only have one Secretary of State at a time. Bill Clinton upstaged his wife. I don't care if she put him up to it. I don't think she had any idea, one, how successful he'd be and how much, you know, public adoration would be headed his way as a hero coming back from North Korea with these free journalists. So she got a little jealous and a little hot under the collar saying, hey, wait a minute, I'm supposed to be the nation's chief diplomat. And here Bill is, you know, showing me up. And she let it out in Africa during this conversation. And I think the only thing worse than this, Jimmy, was the weak explanation coming out of the Secretary of State's office to explain this about somehow this was a stand that Hillary took against women's oppression in Africa and how women don't have enough of a voice in Africa. And she was responding to that whole culture of paternalism. Well, I mean, that was just far.
Well, you know what? I'm sorry, Ruben. I gotta push on that, because, you know, it occurred to me it's kind of sexist, too. And I mean, to have some brother stand up and ask this. He didn't say that.
The brother didn't ask that question. The brother asked about President
Obama.
There are two different
actually versions of this. Partly they're responsible for this confusion. The first version that the State Department put out was that it was a mistranslation.
Right.
The second version they put out was that he was nervous and that he misspoke. He didn't mean to say President Clinton. He meant to say President Obama. So anyway, Arsalan.
It was a human moment. I think that she did not do a good job in being the chief diplomat of the United States in that instance of public diplomacy. I don't think this speaks to her talent or her wisdom as Secretary of State. And, you know, I think that we're all going to have to come to terms with the fact that Bill Clinton will always be an international gangster.
Or,
he's, he, we, he's always going to be a part of the global zeitgeist.
Right.
And
right.
So, you know,
let the player play.
Right. Don't. It's like, you know, you got to hate the game.
You know what, Pablo? I think maybe Hillary had been reading some recent polls that, you know, the Rasmussen report reported that even now she's Secretary of State. And her husband is beating her out in the polls in popularity. Right. 58% to 53%. What's that about? Go ahead, Pablo.
I mean, I do think it's kind of unfortunate that the trip itself has kind of been under the rug a little bit because of it. It's fantastically admirable. She's going to the Congo and confronting the issue of rape as a crime of war. Going to Nigeria, which might be the most important part of Africa nowadays, according to the State Department, the genocide in Zimbabwe and Somalia. I mean, what she's trying to do is bring a spotlight, if not in this moment, but in the larger scheme, to exactly the problem of, you know, women being oppressed to accountability, to bring deterrence to these places and the militias that kind of rule them. I think what her trip and sort of showing that America and the international community at the very least is watching Africa is a huge, huge thing that, you know, and it's sort of unfortunate that everyone's been talking about this outburst, although understandably, instead of the actual point of her trip at large.
Which is the kind of thing that makes me wonder again, you know, what is this really about? I mean, is there a point at which we can actually focus on the substance as opposed to, like, the gender and the whole Clinton drama piece? I mean, it's hard to say. If the situation were reversed and this were a male who kind of snapped on somebody and had, like, the neck going and be like, oh, no, you didn't, you know? Or is it because it's a woman, it's Hillary Clinton, that becomes the focus of the conversation? I don't know.
This is Ruben. If it was a male, Todd Palin, if it were someone who is overshadowed by his wife, you know, his
I
wife.
I think
poor,
so.
That poor soul.
Yeah,
if Todd Palin,
he said, you know, if he likewise felt, or, you know, back in the day with Geraldine Ferraro and John Sicaro, I mean, if you are Mr. Ferraro to the minds of some people and you snap at somebody, you know, this isn't so complicated. This
She's
is
a
just
distinguished
about
public servant in her
right.
own right. Todd
and
Palin is not.
Yeah,
I don't think those analogies work.
For most Washingtonians, I think, you know, we all have come to terms with the fact that Bill and Hillary Clinton, the Clintons, are sort of our version of the Real Housewives of Washington, D.C.
But okay, you know what? Speaking of accountability, Rick Pitino, the University of Louisville's legendary men's basketball coach, my man got some splaining to do for...
Let me help you here.
Oh, yeah.
He issued an apology this week
right.
for a sexual encounter he had with a woman in a restaurant back in 2003.
Right.
She allegedly blackmailed him right. over this incident, but then it emerged
right.
in the course of
right. that's why it
of
went public.
When this incident went public, that in fact he had to acknowledge he had a consensual sexual relationship with
right.
or encounter with this woman
right.
in this restaurant. Both parties are married.
Right.
There's
ridiculous.
Other unpleasantness,
yeah.
and of course he apologized. If you want to hear what
yeah,
he had to say about that, okay, here it is. All Here's right. what he had to say.
The past 7 months have been very difficult on the people I love. And I made a decision 7 months ago because of something I preached to my players for the 30 some odd years I've been coaching. They've heard it once a week for 30 some odd years. And it goes like this. I said, when you have a problem, if you tell the truth, your problem becomes part of your past. If you lie, it becomes part of your future. And I made a very difficult decision to tell the truth to the federal authorities, the local authorities, to the university officials, and most important, the people that love me the most, my family and friends.
Pablo, should he be fired? Should he lose his job for this? Should his conduct be relevant to his gig?
Well, if it was up to me, he would be fired. This is bad, first off. We first heard about this in April, the extortion for $10 million. And there's also the other element of paying for an abortion / health insurance,
yeah, exactly.
which in Kentucky, you'd think wouldn't go over too well. But that's the power of college basketball. I mean, college basketball is different from pro basketball. If it was a pro coach, I don't think I'd take as hard a line as I would with Rick Pitino at Louisville because his job, ostensibly, mm-hmm. is to teach young minds. It's not just to, you know, win games, which he does as well as anybody else. And that, you know, if you still buy into that dimension of college basketball as this place for young men to grow and learn, then you fire the guy. If you don't, and if you think it's about winning and it's big business and a multi-million-dollar industry,
right.
which in reality it probably is, then yeah, you keep the guy. But in my mind, in a perfect world, he'd be gone.
No, it's a good point. This is Arsalan. I mean, I agree with everything that Pablo said. From a layman's perspective, who is a sports junkie, you know, it's really disappointing to see just the level of impunity that we're starting to see in many different places. Let's also keep in mind, this is not some, you know, Rick Pitino coming clean,
mm-hmm.
you know, sort of, you know, I'm the victim in all of this. He knew that it eventually was going to become a part of the public record. It,
mm-hmm.
would obviously, you know, soon be found out. And, you know, he was trying to cut it off at the pass.
You know, Ruben, help me out here. How I see this
yeah.
is as a father, as a father, and at one point I was a husband. It's like, you know, I think when you're a man and you got kids at home and a wife and you're setting it out in the restaurant and bathrooms, you know, the state of manhood generally and your manhood in particular is in crisis. That's what I think. Ruben,
yeah,
help me out.
That's bad form, baby. That's
yeah,
bad form.
Man.
No, I'll tell you what. I'm not trying
to be very quiet on this.
Listen, I'm not an expert on sports, but I'm an expert on restaurants. I'll tell you right now, he's been banned from all restaurants. I don't want him in the kitchen.
Absolutely.
I don't want him anywhere near the kitchen. I eat in those places. I don't want him.
The Patino rule.
This is not
rule.
Stuff you do in a restaurant.
Patino rule.
Can I just ask one more question? I'm curious.
Yes,
too, because he's the other sports guy here. You said you think he should be fired. Do you think he will be?
No, not at all.
No. Nobody thinks so.
And what I was going to – I agree with Pablo all the way. And what I was going to say is come March 2010, if Louisville gets to the Sweet 16 or Elite Eight, nobody will ever have remembered this situation in our collective.
But you all
zeitgeist.
Say you will. But you all say you will.
We're naive guys. at the core, we're sort of we try to look through at sports. I think, and I speak for Arsalan as well in this. I think we hope for a higher standard for what we want out of college sports, which has been such a battleground in terms of this issue. Whether it's do we pay players, do we kind of adhere to standards of amateurism? I mean, at what point do we realize that these kids are mercenaries instead of students? If you vote for them as mercenaries, then you let him play. If you vote for them as students, then you fire him.
All right, gentlemen. Well, I got to clear off the table, and that's a wrap. You know, I want to thank you so much for coming out and doing the shop, and I have to pass the ball to the woman of the house, Michelle Martin.
Why, thank you. Jimmy Israel is a freelance journalist who writes for TheRoot.com. He's also a presidential fellow at Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, Ohio. And Arsalan Iftikhar is the founder of TheMuslimGuide.com and a civil rights attorney. And they were both here in our studios in Washington. Pablo Torre is a reporter for Sports Illustrated, and he joined us from our studios in New York. And Ruben Navarrete is a syndicated columnist, and he's frequently featured on CNN.com. And he joined us from member station KOGO in San Diego. Gentlemen, thank you all so much.
Peace.
Thanks. You.
Yep.
And that's our program for today. Tell Me More is produced by Brechton Booker, Jasmine Garsh, Irva Gunja, Lee Hill, Elliot Hannon, Douglas Hopper, Arjun Hutchins, and Jennifer Longmire. Our planning editor is Louise Clemens. Our line editor is Alicia Montgomery. The program is directed by Rob Sachs and Monica Evstatieva. Our technical director is Kimberly Jones. Our theme music was composed by Underdog Entertainment, with additional arrangements by Ian Honeyman. The supervising senior producer is Tashima Walker. I'm Michelle Martin, and you've been listening to Tell Me More from NPR News and the African American Public Radio Consortium. Let's talk more on Monday.